And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you on demand on your own time by checking out the Nick Craig Show podcast in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. Well, we, of course, have a very important United States Senate race that is making its way to North Carolina next year, and the Democrat candidate is going to be former Governor Roy Cooper. And he is, of course, a well-known quantity, a well-known individual. And it's interesting, and we talked about this earlier in the week when Republican candidate Michael Whatley joined us. Roy Cooper has a very high favorability rating in North Carolina. And unfortunately, that is to be expected because the vast majority of the media across our state is very left-wing. It is a media that, just like you see at the national level, will hammer Republicans on anything and everything, but consistently give Democrats a free pass. And we see this and have seen this time and time again. And it's why when you look at political polling, you'll see that Roy Cooper, and now turning the page over to Josh Stein, has a very high approval rating. And that is in large part due to the fact that it's not that these guys are without controversy. I mean, it's politics, right? There's always going to be controversy. There's always going to be issues. There's always going to be bad PR that comes forward. But unfortunately, the vast majority of North Carolina never hears about it. Unless you are somebody that reads, and of course, I do some work for them, Carolina Journal, or listens to conservative talk radio, or really digs into the nuts and bolts as to what's going on in North Carolina politics, you likely have no idea what the controversies are that are surrounding Roy Cooper. And that is because the media in this state, just like the media at the national level, will carry water and do anything in their power to protect Democrats. Anything. Yet, when there's even the slightest little controversy that revolves around a Republican, it is front page news day after day, night after night. It is a very dishonest media. And so that has allowed people like Roy Cooper and now Democrat Governor Josh Stein to kind of go through the paces without having to deal with major criticism. Because the reality is this, the vast majority of North Carolina's public is not super politically engaged. Now, they might be a little bit politically engaged, right? Maybe they keep up with the news a little bit. But then, of course, you're reliant on your news source to tell you what the hell's going on. And if you are trusting the likes of WRAL and the News and Observer and some of these other channels that report on more state political stuff, you're likely not getting the full story. So if you have been in Eastern North Carolina now for about the last decade or so, you've known that there's been two major storms that have affected the eastern half of the state. That is Hurricanes Matthew and Hurricanes Florence. And both of those storms, different areas, but both of those storms leaving very long-lasting impacts on the eastern half of our state. And so when Hurricane Matthew hit, there was the spin-up of a program called NCORR. This is N-C-O-R-R. It stands for the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. This is what NCORR is, and it was set up just based on its name to deal with Matthew and Florence. Matthew hit in 2016, Florence hit in 2018. So this entity was spun up under the direction of the governor to handle the massive amounts of federal monies that were flowing into the state after the hurricanes and the massive amount of state dollars that needed to be appropriated and allocated to deal with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage and destructions, people's homes, roadways, businesses, kind of a wide gambit of everything. Now, if you are a astute political observer, and we talked about this a lot when I was back on the radio here in Wilmington, you're familiar with NCORR. You're familiar with the mismanagement of this entity. They consistently could not keep within their budget. They were consistently going back to the General Assembly with their tail between their legs, pleading to lawmakers to give them more money because they need to get more people back in their homes. NCOR has been an undisputed, a complete, abysmal disaster for the state of North Carolina. And this was under the sole discretion of Governor Roy Cooper. This was his baby, this was his project, and it was a complete freaking failure. And I'm not saying it was a failure purely for political purposes. It was a failure because to this day, here we are, late November 2025, we're, a week away from Thanksgiving, and there are still people that are not back in their homes from Hurricane Matthew. That storm hit the state almost a decade ago. And yes, relief takes time. Absolutely. Like, you're seeing it out west right now. Relief takes time. Recovery takes time. But a decade? 10 years to get your home either rebuilt or have the repairs that need to be done on it completed? 10 years? I would argue at that point, the word failure is accurate to use. I would argue when you have hit almost a decade from when a storm impacted an area, it is accurate and I think justifiable to say that it has been a failure. So we got a new report out yesterday. And again, this is the whole NCOR discussion is nothing new. If you've been a reader of CarolinaJournal.com for some time, they have been covering this in all of the committee hearings and all of the reports now for quite some time. It's nothing new. What is new is a brand new report out from the state auditor's office looking into some of the issues with NCOR. This was released yesterday by Dave Bolick's office, and it is highlighting the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, NCOR. And so this report, which is, by the way, 509 pages, goes through what happened with this entity, what happened with this agency, and how we got to the point where almost a decade after Hurricane Matthew impacted eastern North Carolina, how it has taken, taken a decade, there's still more than 1,000 people that are not in their homes from that storm, right? So it's not like, oh, it took a decade, but we got everything squared away. No, that's not the case at all. It's still actively being worked on. The leadership at NCOR changed just earlier this year. So this is still, unfortunately, a very active, dynamic, fluid situation. And it really, to me, highlights the failure of government. And, you know, as a conservative, as a limited government type of guy, like many of you are, we find ourselves in positions where we say, you know, this is just not the case of, this is just not something that the government excels in. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't believe that you will find a greater example of this than NCOR. I don't believe you'll find a greater example of the complete and total incompetence of government than the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, which has pissed away hundreds of millions of dollars, has been a terrible entity to interface with for people that literally lost everything. I mean, look at the headline picture right here on the on the front of the auditor's report. This is from Hurricane Matthew. I mean, this is somebody's entire, pretty much all of their earthly possessions laying on their front lawn. Mattresses, headboards, couches, furniture, desks, nightstands, tables, everything that they own, just laying out on their front yard. A terrible situation to be dealing with as Mother Nature bare down in 2016 and 2018 here in eastern North Carolina. Right, these people lost, in some cases, everything and loved ones. Right? There were deaths with both of those storms. And the response from NCOR, the response from this government agency, was a complete and total flop. And I bring all of this up, and I opened with the Senate race next year. This is what is going to be incumbent on whoever the Republican candidate ends up being, whether it's Michael Whatley or Don Brown, who we'll have on the show here shortly, not today, but in the next couple of days. Whoever the Republican candidate is, this is the kind of stuff that they need to be talking about. You, as a conservative or a Republican, when you're having these conversations with friends, family members, coworkers, wherever it's coming up, and it will as we get into next year, this is the kind of stuff that needs to be pointed out. Because if you went into the Walmart over here in Wilmington off New Center Drive and asked 10 people if they had ever heard of NCOR and know what NCOR is, my guess is that none of them, maybe one, but probably none of them would say they've heard of NCOR. Meaning they have no idea what this entity was, the failure that it has been, and the damage that it has caused to citizens across the state of North Carolina. Whether you're talking about, Matthew had a stronger impact more in the Lumberton, Robeson County area, of course, Hurricane Florence, immediately right here on the coast, and of course, some inland impacts as well. Nobody has any idea unless you are, what I call what you and I are, right? The 1% of 1% when it comes to following state politics. So this 509-page report is now out. State Auditor Dave Bolick hosted a press conference on this yesterday. We'll listen to a little bit from State Auditor Bolick. We'll get into some details on the report as well, as this is the kind of stuff that needs to come forward and Roy Cooper needs to answer for, right? You want to be a United States Senator. You want to serve the people of North Carolina. What about your botched hurricane relief, Roy? Right? That's a fair question. It's not a cheap shot. It's not an unfair question. What about hurricane relief? How did that happen and how did that go under your administration? Not very well. Here's State Auditor Dave Bolick.
Applicants had to go through 8 separate steps to complete an application process as part of the rebuild program. Each step took an average of a minimum of 100 days. And then the grant determination, so your eligibility determination, took an average of 936 days.
Now, hold on
Some
a second.
Family-
hold on a second. I'm going to pause. Auditor Bolick, great guy, by the way. He joined us back here a couple of, last month, I think. The average application time was 900 plus days. 900. There's only 365 days in a year. You do the math on that. This is NCOR. This is Roy Cooper. This is their failure.
Police remained in temporary housing for as long as 1,400 days. On average, NCOR did not start construction on eligible projects. And the way we talked about it at our office is they didn't start swinging hammers until approximately 4 years after homeowners were deemed eligible. That's how bad it was. And quite frankly, the people of North Carolina deserve better. There's a whole list of reasons in this report. We've included as an addendum the initial HUD application so you can see what the initial idea was and the front-end planning as opposed to what the ultimate execution looked like. For this effort, we also conducted, we didn't just sit in a conference room. We went and talked to folks that were affected by the storm. We also engaged Craig Fugate, who is an expert on hurricane recovery. Mr. Fugate actually led President Obama's FEMA agency, and he also worked for the state of Florida in their federal emergency management program. You know, his note on NCOR to us, and I think this is really instructive, and I think this tells a top-line summary of what we observed when we took a look at NCOR, and that is that NCOR spent, quote, a tremendous amount of time on process when their job should have been swinging hammers. And you'll see that throughout our report. So
I'm going to pause Auditor Bolick here once again. This is kind of an interesting thing. And this has been, and as we'll go through some of the details in the report, we'll hear more from Auditor Bolick. We'll go through some of the report from his office. Process is important, absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about a storm, as you can see behind in this, if you're watching on our video feeds this morning, you'll see behind Auditor Bolick that more than almost 12,000 applications into NCOR. Right, so this is a large-scale project. Let's not pretend that we're talking about 25 or 30 houses or even 300 or 400 houses. We're talking about over 10,000 individuals that needed assistance. So process is important, no question about it. But unfortunately, when we talk about the bureaucracy, when we talk about the inefficient nature of government, most of the time, not all, but most of the time, it revolves around process. Things take so long to get going that by the time you're up to speed, you blink a couple of times and it's been 10 freaking years and people are still waiting for relief in the state of North Carolina. That is the quintessential issue when government takes on projects like this, which I will note is a massive project. There's no question about it that Hurricanes Matthew and Florence left unimaginable destruction behind in some areas of eastern North Carolina. No question about it. Not an easy thing to deal with. I don't think State Auditor Dave Bullock or anybody would say this was an easy problem to solve. It wasn't easy at all. But there's a proper way to go about it. There's an efficient and effective way to manage this. And then there's an inefficient way to do it. And there's no question in my mind this morning that the state of North Carolina, under the direction of former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper, failed the citizens of eastern North Carolina as it relates to hurricane relief. No question in my mind about it.
So what are these issues? Well, they were management at its heart. One, poor budgeting practices. NCOR had inconsistent reconciliation across financial and management systems. They managed the homeowners program with three different systems. They used both the North Carolina financial system, disaster recovery grant reporting, and they contracted to put into place Salesforce as a computer program. In one case, our team looked at the disparities across programs, and I would direct you to the latter appendixes, Appendix F, G, and H, for some of this data in specific. There was a 129% difference in payments made, for example, to Courtyard Marriott between two of NCOR's financial systems. And I'm not picking on Courtyard Marriott. That was just a line item to show you the lack of accuracy that occurred throughout their accounting process. Unreliable data and delays created real problems for NCOR. I want to point out, and again, this is not an indictment of the program. This is an indictment of how the program is used. Look, I've seen now in 10 and a half months as state auditor that the state of North Carolina invests in a lot of technology. Technology at its heart is nothing but a tool for us to use to make things work, right? Technology itself doesn't fall out of the sky and land on the desk and work. We have to put it to use. I want to point out that NCOR spent, and this is highlighted in our report, $25.4 million on design and implementation of the Salesforce program that they used.
That is insanity. $24 million in implementation of Salesforce, which is a CRM. It's a customer relation management system, I think is what the acronym CRM stands for. They spent $24 million getting a system set up so that they could keep track of the projects, the payments, and what was going on. Now, for those that are not in the technology sector, Salesforce is an expensive piece of software, no question about it. I would argue it's one of the best pieces of software for this as well. But $24 million implementing a data system just goes to show you what the real difference is between the public and private sector. There are major Fortune 500 companies that use Salesforce that have not spent anywhere near that kind of money implementing. And these people are running multi-hundred-plus-billion-dollar businesses. Now, they may have spent a couple million. They may even have spent $10 million. But $20-plus million dollars to implement Salesforce? To track payments? That's absurd. That's absolute insanity. Think about how many homes could have been rebuilt. Think about how many people could have been given relief if you would have just spent, you know, maybe $3 or $4 million, which again, Salesforce is expensive. And I understand that some of this stuff has cost to it. I'm not oblivious or ignorant to that fact. But $24 million? That's insane. Leslie is commenting on our Rumble live chat saying $24 million, someone lined their pockets on behalf of the taxpayers. Oh, absolutely. And the work, the money probably wasn't all paid to Salesforce. The way that Salesforce works is they have a list of verified vendors that are, you know, accredited to work with their software. So one of those vendors likely got into a contract with Encore, and every single time they needed something changed, it cost thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars to make those modifications. I mean, it's just, when we talk about government, we talk about the inefficiencies, we talk about the waste, this is the kind of stuff that we're talking about. Your job, and State Auditor Bolick noted this at the beginning, the job of Encore was to swing hammers and get people back in their homes. And instead, they pissed away $20-plus million implementing Salesforce, a CRM. Right? That is a major, major problem.
I want you to think about that for a minute, because let's put that number into context. The entire state appropriation post the DAVE Act, which was the General Assembly's additional resources they've given the North Carolina Auditor's Office to look at efficiencies across North Carolina, post the DAVE Act, our entire appropriation at the State Auditor's Office is roughly $25 million for the entire office. And Encore spent more than $25 million on the implementation of Salesforce, a single technology. And to be frank, in our discussions with Encore, it really didn't do the job for them, and it wasn't the program's fault. It was the implementation of the program, the lack of a standard operating procedure, the lack of proper training, and the lack of really getting in and figuring out exactly why they had all the bells and whistles attached to the program and have the competencies within the organization. Not that folks couldn't have been brought up to speed, but they weren't brought up to speed on how to use the program.
And, you know, this is important. And again, I have a technology background, so I'm familiar with Salesforce. It is a very complex piece of software, which is great. But if you're managing a complex business and you need a very highfalutin piece of software to conduct your business operations, Salesforce is great. But as the auditor just noted, this software is great. And it is very, very powerful. But there's a saying in data, or there's a saying in technology: you put crap in, you get crap out. I use another word to describe it that is starts with an S to describe the same thing. You put in garbage, you get garbage out. Even the best piece of software in the world is not going to fix bad data coming in. And as State Auditor Dave Bolick noted, not only was the data probably not good, nobody was trained to use it. So they spent $20+ million on the implementation of Salesforce and then didn't use it to its fullest extent. That is an insane amount of money to implement into something and not use it to its full advantage. It just doesn't make any sense. Had they spent $25 million on Salesforce, and they got all of the projects done on time, and everything was solved and everything was dealt with, I probably still would have batted a couple of eyes and said, that's a lot of money to spend. But it obviously worked. So, you know, I can only be so critical. The irony in all of this, and the irony is unfortunate because people have been harmed and seriously hurt by this. The irony is they spent all of the money, didn't use it efficiently, and the end result is Encore ran out of money multiple times, which presumably Salesforce would deal with. You spend $25 million implementing a CRM, you would assume, and this is not coming from just some random guess, having worked in this industry, if you're going to spend that kind of money, then your budgeting, your finances should be absolutely spotless. absolutely spotless. They spent all the money. They never trained anybody on how to use the software efficiently. And the end result was that money was gone. The system wasn't implemented correctly for them or their use case. And the money ended up getting wasted and people got hurt. That's the unfortunate reality of this situation.
Inconsistent budget controls and monitoring. Incor operated reactively, making spending decisions based on available funds rather than comprehensive needs or performance targets. And that is really something that we saw that should be highlighted. Essentially, what happened here is they had a pot of money, they spent it, and basically took the attitude, and one of their leaders in interviews and in front of a legislative committee actually commented, well, we're going to spend the money, and when we're out, the program's over. And that's the attitude that Incor took. And what does that mean? Well, that means that they did not spend money on a mission-oriented project with measurable incremental goals. They had inadequate vendor oversight. Nearly $785 million in public money was dispersed to vendors without a single reconciled source of financial truth or robust oversight. If you look in the appendix at the end of our audit, and you'll see it online, you'll see the actual expenditures to vendors that we've listed those expenditures so you can look at the amount of money that was spent.
$785 million. Doled out to vendors. Now, when we say vendors in this case, we're talking about contractors, right? Because Encore was tasked with and responsible with getting people's homes either rebuilt completely, remediating their home. Maybe a lot of folks had mold and other issues in their homes for not having power and water coming in. So either rebuilds, remediation, complete reconstruction, a whole bunch of different things. And so that money, you would spend a lot of your money on your vendors because the state itself, of course, wasn't swinging the hammers. They were hiring people to do it. Encor was set up to manage that. They, of course, did a terrible job doing so. $785 million on vendors. And as you just heard from State Auditor Bolick, no reconciliation of that. So you're writing out and giving vendors, in some cases, individual vendors, hundreds of millions of dollars. And there is no tracking, no data to back up that the work is actually getting done. In private business, something like this could not have possibly ever happened. Hell, even in charitable, nonprofit organizations, something like this could never have happened. It wouldn't have been allowed to happen. But when you look at Roy Cooper, you look at Laura Hogshead, who is the head of Encor, and you look at, of course, state government as a whole, it's the only place where something like this can actually happen, where there can be so much incompetence and so much inefficiency.
They never reconciled those. In fact, there were many times we found where invoices were paid without verification that work was actually completed.
Great. Sounds perfect.
You know, I could go on and on about this stuff, but let me point this out about vendor control. There are a lot of private corporations and companies that can do things more efficiently than the state of North Carolina can do. So it's not, this audit and our report in no way says that we should not call upon private industry to assist the state of North Carolina. But, you know, you can't outsource governance. So we have to have management from the state level. And what that can enable is it can enable productive relationships between private contractors and the government to set reasonable expectations on both sides of the contractual relationship and outcomes that are measurable. What we found across contracting is that there were no metrics or measurables. Late in the game, under the new management at Encor, they added measurables to independent contractors on site. But early on, there were no metrics, no measurables, no way for the management or the taxpayers to know exactly what type of value they were getting. That wasn't corporation contractors' fault. That's state of North Carolina's fault for not including it in the contract. So we've got to do better in that arena. So we've offered some short-term actions and some long-term recommendations. Let me say on the short-term.
We'll get back to the recommendations and some of that stuff. I want to go through some other details in this report, and we'll hear what some of these recommendations are. But, you know, Auditor Bullock just points out a very important thing there when he's talking about, you know, the responsibility of government to be good stewards. My thought on it is good stewards, good shepherds of the state dollars or federal dollars, because NCOR received a lot of money from the state of North Carolina and a lot of money from the federal government. I mean, right here in the auditor's report, you'll see right at the top, over $1 billion in combined federal and state funding. $709 million from a federal community block development grant, a CDBG grant, which is, you know, money coming directly from the feds, which is still your my taxpayer dollars. And then close to $300 million from the state of North Carolina, directly from the state coffers, directly from the state government. So you've got a lot of taxpayer money. Again, folks, government doesn't generate income. Government doesn't produce something that they can generate income on, that they can generate revenue on. They take from you and I and they reallocate. And they spend on things like this. They spend on things like relief and recovery efforts out in Western North Carolina. And for whatever reason, maybe it's size, scope, scale of government, there just seems to never be any incentive to make sure that we do things in an efficient manner. We just spend and spend and spend and spend and spend. When the money runs out, NCOR, Laura Hogshead, goes crying back to the General Assembly, complaining that we don't have any money and we can't pay contractors and we can't pay the people. We can't pay for people to stay in hotels anymore. We can't do this. We can't do that. That's their solution. Instead of efficiently managing $1 billion so this doesn't happen, they piss it all away and then go back with their hands open and say, more money, please. You and I could not operate like that in our personal finances. We'd be bankrupt or we'd be completely buried in debt. The company or the business that you work for, whether it's your own small business or you work for somebody else, your business could not operate in that manner. If they do, well, we know what happens. They go out of business. They file for bankruptcy. You lose your job. Not a great situation. The only entities that can operate like this are state and federal governments. And it's bad when it happens in any facet, but it's especially frustrating when it's government that is supposed to be interfacing with regular, everyday people, trying to provide them with something that I would argue is pretty important and necessary in your life, which is a place to live, shelter. And so you would have thought that somebody like Roy Cooper, who again was responsible for this, I'm not saying that it was that he was running the day-to-day operations. He obviously was not, but it's his baby. You know, the buck stops with him. He was the governor of North Carolina during this entire time. It was his responsibility to put competent people in charge to make sure that this process ran efficiently and effectively. He chose not to do so. So it absolutely is his fault. It's absolutely his problem. It's absolutely his burden to bear. And so you would have thought after years of disaster, because this didn't just come onto the scene yesterday, from go, this thing has been a mess. It took almost 4 years from the start of NCOR till any actual work on the ground began. In that four-year time, Roy Cooper should have said, we've got a problem here. We need to course correct. We need leadership that can get this project done, that can get this process done. And the reality is, it can be done. You can look at our neighboring states. South Carolina got impacted heavily as well by Hurricanes Florence and Hurricane Matthew. They didn't have this problem with NCOR. Florida, seemingly every year, gets nailed by a couple of bad hurricanes. They don't have this problem. Yes, relief takes time. Yes, recovery takes time. But folks, we're talking about next year will be a decade, 10 years since Hurricane Matthew affected the eastern half of North Carolina. And there are still over 1,000 people that are not back in their homes. That is an insane, completely insane situation. We'll grab a quick break and go over some of the other issues with NCORE. Then we'll go back and hear more from State Auditor Dave Bolick as it relates to some of the suggestions. And why are those suggestions relevant? Well, the state is doing the same freaking thing out west right now. It's not NCORE that's doing it. It's a new entity called GrowNC, the governor's recovery office, or whatever the acronym stands for, that Josh Stein spun up. And so it is absolutely incumbent on officials, Josh Stein and the people around him, to make sure that the disasters of NCORE do not repeat out in Western North Carolina, which was a much more impactful storm. The geography out west is completely different than here on the east. There are challenges out there far exceed what happened here in the eastern half of the state. I'm not minimizing Matthew and Florence. They were bad storms. Western North Carolina, whole new can of worms. And so if they have not learned from NCORE, NCORE is going to look like a non-issue 15 years from now when we're looking at how much money was wasted out in Western North Carolina. That is why this report is so important. That is why the work of State Auditor Dave Bolick and the team under him is so incredibly important. You have to be able to learn from this stuff. Now, if I could hop back in a time machine and fix this 10 years ago, that would be great, but we can't. So what do? We got to learn moving forward. We cannot have this same thing repeat in Western North Carolina. We just cannot have it. So we'll get into some of those details coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Before that, I want to thank Melissa Gott and the team over at The Law Group for their continued support of The Nick Craig Show, and want to let you know when legal challenges arise, whether good or bad, make sure you put your trust in The Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating a real estate transaction, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. And great news, folks, Melissa and her team, well, they're members of our community. They're our neighbors. They live right here in southeastern North Carolina. Their office is located in downtown Wilmington, and they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online. Their great website, lawgroupnc.com, where you can read about all of their attorneys, view all of their areas of expertise, their areas of practice, and they've got a great blog that discusses a variety of legal issues and challenges you could be facing. Lawgroupnc.com is their website. Their phone number, 910-251-6088. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate The Law Group and their continued support of The Nick Craig Show. All right, we'll grab a quick break, continue with our coverage of this brand new audit of NCORE. That's the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency out of the State Auditor's Office. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Thursday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us either live or on demand as we continue our coverage of a brand new report out from Dave Bolick, the Office of the State Auditor, as it relates to NCORE. That's the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. This entity was spun up in the aftermaths of Hurricane Matthew and Florence in eastern North Carolina to deal with, well, rebuilding and providing individuals with homes. And so the project was a disaster from the start. The process that the entity went through to work through applications to deal with issues was just a disaster. And there was a great comment that just came into our Rumble live chat. It's probably costing more to house those 1,000 families for 10 years than buy a home. That's a great point. And that is exactly what is pointed out here in the auditor's report. This reading. There were 8 steps that applicants had to go through in order for a project to be completed. Each step took at least 100 days on average, with grant determination, so start to finish, taking an average of 936 days. Some families remained in temporary housing for more than 1,400 days, incurring lodging costs exceeding $230,000 for a single household. Now, 1,400 days is almost 4 full years. And so to the point in our, for the point being made in our chat this morning, the amount of money that it cost to put these people up in hotels while NCOR was screwing around figuring out what the hell was going on, the state should have just bought them a new freaking house. I mean, folks, the 230 is not the cost to rebuild or rehabilitate or to reconstruct a home. The 230 is to a hotel vendor or a short-term rental provider to have these people living somewhere for 4 years. $230,000 for a single household, per single household. Many of them being in the temporary housing program for more than 1,400 days. That works out to like 3.8 years, almost 4 full years. A complete mismanagement of a system. And folks, this is where you need strong leadership. And Laura Hogshead was the one responsible for this. And so she's the one that takes the responsibility. This was Roy Cooper's baby. He takes responsibility as well. Somebody at some point should have been able to look at this program a couple of years into this and say, we've got a major freaking problem here. We have a major problem that we have been paying, you know, Courtyard Marriott thousands of dollars a week for 4 years to provide these individuals with temporary housing. We've got, there's got to be a better solution to that. There's got to be a better way to deal with this. I mean, this is just common sense. But unfortunately, government doesn't tend to play in the realm of common sense. I mentioned this earlier, I'll restate it again. This would not have happened if a charity was running this operation. This would not have happened if a private business was running this operation. Nobody would have allowed this to go on outside of government. But that's exactly, unfortunately, what happened. And so as you go through this report and look at some of the issues in here, just reading a little bit more, NCOR committed disaster recovery funds to projects in order applications were ready to proceed rather than through a comprehensive assessment of total disaster-related needs. This approach, combined with inconsistent reconciliation across financial and program management systems, meant that NCOR did not know the full cost of recovery until after the application period closed, which, by the way, was back in 2023. Poor program data quality and delays in disaster recovery efforts prolonged hardships and increased costs. Incomplete and inconsistent program data within Salesforce, one of the three systems used to manage the HRP, caused HRP to experience operational challenges and delays. As we already talked about, NCOR spent $25.4 million implementing Salesforce, including costs related to ongoing consulting and technical support. Despite the substantial funds committed to Salesforce, several issues impacting hurricane victims' ability to get through the eligibility process persisted. Issues included blank fields, negative processing times, missing notice to proceed dates, and instances of applications marked complete without corresponding end dates. These data shortcomings made backlog assessment and process tracking difficult. On average, eligibility determination for applicants took 140 days, and rebuild efforts did not begin until nearly 4 years after NCOR made these determinations. 4 years. This isn't 4 years start to finish. This is 4 years from eligibility determination. So you've gone through all the steps. You're eligible through the NCOR program. From that period of time, on average, 4 years before anything was actually done. Miserable, miserable situation. NCOR failed to translate HUD action plans into practical, enforceable budget and schedules for daily management of HRP without a structured financial roadmap or ongoing budget monitoring. NCOR operated reactively, making spending decisions based on available funds rather than comprehensive needs or performance targets. The absence of regular reconciliation between planned budgets and actual expenditures and the lack of proactive oversights were significant factors in a nearly $297 million shortfall that required emergency appropriations from the North Carolina General Assembly. So the GA had to come back and then allocate to them almost $300 million additional dollars to continue through the program. And I unfortunately can report to you this morning that as we sit here, late November 2025, the work still isn't done. I mean, with all of the money that has flowed in, more than $1 billion that has flown into this program, the work is still not complete. People are still living in hotel rooms. People are still not back in their homes. With $1 billion and only 11,000 applicants, the state could have cut these people checks for hundreds of thousands of dollars and been fine. I mean, it's beyond the pale of comprehension. How can something be this screwed up? How can something be this poorly managed? That's the state of North Carolina. That's NCOR. That's Laura Hogshead. That's Roy Cooper. Plain and simple. There's nobody else to point the finger at. And so it's an unfortunate situation. It's unfortunate for the people that are dealing with this and have dealt with this now, in some cases for close to a decade. But, you know, it's one thing to harp on the past. It's another thing to figure out, okay, how do we move forward from this? And one of the things that I love about what State Auditor Dave Bolick is doing in his position is every single report that he produces, and he's producing a lot of them. I mean, his team is working presumably around the clock banging these reports out. There's always recommendations. There's always things that can be learned from so that we do not make the exact same mistake again. And so State Auditor Dave Bolick gets into some of this, and then we'll go back to the report. Here's Auditor Bolick on some of the recommendations on this program, short-term and long-term recommendations.
I've met several times with Prior Gibson, who now heads up NCOR. Our team has worked really close with Prior. I think that's a fair assessment, and with his team. And they have been accommodating, open. And they have, you can see even in the report that we produced that over the last 12 to 13 months, the activity from NCOR and the production of NCOR has gotten better. And the results are there to show for it. So I do commend them for that. But still, and we've talked about this, and our team is working with them to enhance budgeting and financial oversight, strengthen the contract management, and improve data integrity and reporting. We really, 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 and I'm going to go into this in a minute, really wanted to be able to show a full financial accounting of everything that happened at NCOR. I brought in some high-speed experts, and I will tell you that when we took a look at the finances, the amount of time, effort, energy, and money, we're talking well over seven figures worth of time and money to bring in contractors to actually reconstruct a true budget of exactly what NCOR spent, we viewed as probably not worth, in fact, we viewed it as not worth the taxpayers' dollars to go back and necessarily reconstruct every single dime because it's already sunk costs. So what we're going to do instead is moving forward in order to give our policymakers in the legislature and policymakers in the executive branch. If you look at the enabling statute, it envisions the legislature when they asked or really required the state auditor to do work on NCOR, they envisioned that this would be an ongoing relationship for the state auditor's office and that we would continue working on behalf of North Carolinians on this particular agency because it's not slated to actually sunset until the end of October of 26. So That being said, we're going to work with the private contractors who receive public dollars moving forward to get answers to exactly how they deployed taxpayer money on behalf of taxpayers within their contractual obligations to the state of North Carolina. That's where the rubber's really gonna meet the road, so we can be able to ask the folks that went out and did. And look, these contractors, they're not the folks that showed up at a senior citizen's door and knocked on the door and said, hey, I wanna fix your roof. They were invited in by the state of North Carolina to assist us in a job, a long-term recovery job. So they've got a lot of expertise and they can show us exactly how they deployed those dollars. So as I said earlier, moving forward, we can set reasonable expectations on behalf of the state of North Carolina and with our partners in private industry to get real results on behalf of North Carolinians. Long term, what do we propose? We propose that looks like something called Sustainable Outcomes for Long-Term Impact and Disaster Recovery in North Carolina. And that should be a partnership between every member of the Council of State. I said this sort of to the team riding over, and I've said it to some legislators, and I really believe it to be the case. You know, look, I put my name on the ballot, and I told the people of North Carolina that I was going to run statewide and do the best I could on behalf of them as an executive in the state of North Carolina. There's 9 other people that did the same thing in the executive branch. It's time for all 10 of us to get together and come up and work with our legislative friends and our legislative partners to come up with a plan moving forward. We spend millions of dollars and tens of thousands of hours, and we rightfully should. Let me get that clear. We rightfully should spend that time and money on first responders and first response, because that's important. We want swift water rescue. We want fire protection. We want police officers. We want folks to be able to be rescued when they're in harm's way, and that is government's primary function in terms of disaster response. We spend $0 and 0 hours planning and preparing for the back end of the house, the financial accountability of how we spend billions of dollars in taxpayer money in response on long-term recovery. What essentially happens is we stand up in the executive branch an agency whenever something happens. We did that with NCORP. We did it with NC Grow on Helene. There should be a standardized response. And what does that look like? That looks like being able to bring in the individuals who are experts at the local level, who know exactly what their community needs, where things need to be done, how things need to be accounted for. Look, I've traveled this state. I spent 4 days up in Western North Carolina just last week. And I've talked to folks who have directly responded to Helene and have filled out the FEMA paperwork and who have dealt with the state agency on how to deploy these dollars. We have talented people across this state. And that's what happens when an emergency occurs on the first responder end. We bring in the folks that know how to get things done in their local community. We engage them, we activate them, and they're ready to be deployed in a first responder sense. It's time for us to do the same on the back end of the house with the financial accounting so that we can be accountable to the taxpayers in North Carolina for the money that we spend on recovery so that we have a strategy, a plan, and that we're on a mission. Why is that important? That's important because of places like Princeville and places like Speed, North Carolina, in Edgecombe County, where in 1999, Hurricane Floyd flooded much of eastern North Carolina. And those municipalities, those small towns, they didn't grow. And many of them, in the example of Speed, North Carolina, they've died. They no longer exist. In fact, they just filed dissolution paperwork just this past month. And that's because the response long-term was not there to keep those communities viable. Because if you don't have a place to work, and you don't have a house to live in, you move. So to make North Carolina the place we want it to be. We've got to get serious about a long-term strategy to stay on mission when it comes to recovery. We've also recommended a robust budget and financial oversight, strengthening this contract management, and you're going to hear that a lot from the state auditor's office over the next several months, and that is contracting across state government, putting in what we call key performance indicators and metrics so that we start measuring the results and getting into a true partnership with our corporate partners who can do things efficiently and effectively, but that we establish a reasonable and workable relationship with so that both sides understand what the responsibilities are and what the goals and the mission is. We want to also implement comprehensive data governance frameworks. And I'll tell you, we ought to start with that $25 million Salesforce program. And I talked to Prior Gibson about this week, that if there's any way we can harvest value moving forward out of that $25 million investment, we absolutely certainly should. And so I'm going to push that to the very end, because we don't need to waste taxpayer dollars and start something fresh. We've already sunk $25 million into a program designed to do this recovery. Let's use it moving forward. Let's clean it up, get it. I think we can do it very inexpensively as opposed to starting up something from scratch.
So that's State Auditor Dave Bolick in the response to his new report out from his office dealing with NCORD, the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, tasked with the rebuilding of homes after Hurricanes Matthew and Florence. And not trying to be a negative person, but ladies and gentlemen, I can almost guarantee you that the exact same situation is going to unfold in Western North Carolina. You've got another government entity under not the same name, of course, because NCORD is a disaster. So Josh Stein was smart enough to say, yeah, that didn't work. We'll spin up something new. So they've got a brand new entity called GrowNC that is dealing with some of the work and a lot of the work out in the western half of the state. And the same thing, unfortunately, is probably going to unfold. Now, let me end with this and why, and State Auditor Dave Bolick highlighted something very important. He talked about Hurricane Floyd in the late 90s. The reason that North Carolina was fortunate through the early 2000s and really up until Matthew, that there was hurricanes and tropical storms, yes, but you didn't have the major storm like Matthew, like Florence, like Floyd, like some of these other storms. And so the state did not have an entity moving forward dealing with hurricane relief, natural disaster relief long term. And the reason that I believe that this is incredibly important moving forward is some of the conversation that you've heard out of Washington, D.C. Donald Trump has talked about essentially dissolving FEMA and making it the responsibility of the states. And I'm going to be honest with you. I agree with the president's idea and notion of getting the federal government out of relief, because that adds a whole nother bag of worms and issues. But I don't trust the state of North Carolina to handle it. Now, if I lived in Florida, I'd feel completely different. The state of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis and the team around him, they know how to respond to a hurricane. They know how to respond to a natural disaster. Our neighbors, our friends in South Carolina, they're in a very similar situation to us. They don't deal with these things every single year like Florida does. They know how to deal with natural disasters. They know how to deal with hurricane relief. There's no hearings going on in South Carolina right now about a similar entity to NCOR. The people from Matthew and Florence, they're back in their homes. Their issues are dealt with and resolved. This is a uniquely North Carolina problem. And so it's going to take money and it's going to take time, and I'm okay with that, because you do need to have one of these entities that is stood up long term so that every single time you have a storm, you are not starting from scratch, starting from square one and pissing away hundreds of millions of dollars on process and implementation, which is exactly what happened with NCOR and is exactly what's happening with GrowNC right now. Because it's a completely separate entity, what are we doing? We're starting from the ground floor once again. We're learning everything all over again. We've harvested no knowledge or no information from what we learned out of NCOR. And I just have a terrible pit in my stomach as the years go on. And it's going to take years. 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15 years from now, when we're having the exact same discussions about Hurricane Helene in Western North Carolina. Hundreds of millions of dollars wasted, people still waiting for relief from the state of North Carolina with no end in sight. It's a miserable situation. It's completely, and I mean completely, avoidable. You just have to have a strong leader, a strong executive, which Roy Cooper obviously is not. We'll see if Josh Stein can do any better. But you need a strong executive, a strong leader to make these decisions, to make sure that they're involved in this process, and to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, especially with the probability that FEMA as a federal entity takes a major step back and the onus is put on a state like North Carolina to handle these recovery and relief efforts long term. Great job, as always, by State Auditor Dave Bolick. He has done, to say he's done a phenomenal job is an understatement. I mean, he has just done an unbelievably good job with all of these reports. He's only been in office 10 months. He's calling these things out. He's highlighting the issues. And again, most importantly, he's making the recommendations so that we don't do this again. So we don't look back retrospectively 5, 8, 10 years from now and say, well, crap, we did it again. We wasted all of the money. We spent all this money on hotels and all these other things, and we got nothing for it. So a bravo hat tip to him and his team for bringing this information to light. And again, this is something that Roy Cooper is going to have to answer for. Roy, you were in charge for a $1 billion relief program in Eastern North Carolina. And to this day, and unfortunately next year when this Senate race is going on, it's probably going to still happen. There are still going to be individuals that are not back in their homes. Roy Cooper needs to answer to that. Whoever the Republican candidate is, whether it's Michael Whatley or Don Brown, they need to force him on this issue. They absolutely have to. Because he's not without controversy. He's not without scandal. The unfortunate reality is nobody knows about it. Unless you live in Robeson County and have been living in a freaking hotel for the last 10 years, you don't know about NCOR. Unless you're in southeastern North Carolina and seen it firsthand, you don't know about NCOR. It's not even something that people, they couldn't even tell you what it means. They don't even know it exists. That's in large part due to the lackluster media coverage, the left-wing biased media that exists in the state of North Carolina that, lo and behold, doesn't want to cover this. Lo and behold, doesn't want to cover a state agency under Roy Cooper, who needed to beg for an additional $300 million from the state of North Carolina to complete a task. There's no winning for the media. There's no winning for Democrats on this issue. That's why people don't know about it. And it's, you know, kind of ironic as we watch people slam the Trump administration over FEMA. I mean, even now, Josh Stein and Roy Cooper, oh, it's Michael Whatley's fault that FEMA recovery is slow in the western half of the state. The storm happened just a year ago. Yet, mum is the word from Roy Cooper when you ask him how his baby, his entity in NCOR, completely botched hurricane relief and recovery across the eastern half of the state. No self-reflection on the issue at all. It's a miserable, miserable situation. We'll keep an eye on this. And of course, we'll look forward to more information from the state auditor's office on GrowNC, the entity that's supposed to handle some of these issues out in the western half of North Carolina. Great work this morning from State Auditor Dave Bolick. We'll have the links and all of the information from today's show, including that press conference from Auditor Bolick, over at our Patreon, patreon.com/Nick Craig. If you believe that you are getting some value from the show, whether you watch it live or on demand, patreon.com/Nick Craig, $5, $10, $15 a month, whatever you think the show is worth, you can subscribe there, get access to our daily show notes and more. patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Melissa got her team, reach out to them, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it. We'll chat with you Friday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.